Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to E2E Networks Limited Q1 FY27 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Vanessa Fernandes from the Investor Relations team at Adfactors PR. Thank you, and over to you, Ms. Fernandes.
Good morning, everyone. On behalf of E2E Networks Limited, I would like to welcome you all to the earnings conference call for Quarter 1 FY27. Today on the call, we have with us from the management, Mr. Tarun Dua, Managing Director of E2E Networks, and Mr. Nitin Jain, Chief Financial Officer of E2E Networks. We will begin the call with brief opening remarks from the management, followed by a Q&A session. All participant lines will be in listen-only mode during the management's remarks, and the floor will be open for questions thereafter. Please note that certain statements made during this call may be forward-looking in nature. Such forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results or projections to differ materially from those statements. E2E Networks holds no responsibility for any actions taken based on such statements and undertakes no obligation to publicly update these forward-looking statements. I now hand over the call to Mr. Tarun Dua for his opening remarks. Over to you, Tarun.
Thanks, Vanessa, and hi, everyone. Good morning to all of you, and we hope you had a good last couple of months since we last spoke. I'll try and do a very brief coverage of some of the progress that we have made during the last quarter, and then also briefly touch upon how do we see ourselves in today's world. Then I'll hand over the call to Nitin to talk about some of the financial highlights of this quarter, and then we'll be opening the floor for questions. So in this quarter, we have had a couple of milestones, major amongst those being that we went live with our Blackwell. So the 1,024 Blackwells that we had received during last some of the months went online, and they were put on revenue. Now, that was a major thing. We continue to strengthen our sovereign AI platform, which we'll be talking more about, why we believe that is the future. And then we've seen some of the revenue also scaling up on our platform. So coming back to why we feel that, so apart from this, we have continued to make investments into our technology platform in terms of strengthening our team and organization. And we are very, very focused on helping build an ecosystem of customers and partners who can help us become a high-growth organization. Now, coming back to sovereign AI and why sovereign AI is important, in the past, we have spoken about why we are trying to gravitate towards higher-value tokens. Now, when we look at the state of the open source today in terms of where the open source models are, what we find is that they are very, very close behind the frontier models, which are available only through API access. Now, sovereign models using a new cloud operator or an AI factory like E2E Networks, you are able to deploy within your org boundary where you control using our platform, how the model would be deployed, how the model would be fine-tuned, what data the model can access, what is the state that model can retain, what is the state that model should forget. You can control everything using the sovereign AI platform that we have built. So the open-weight models today running on top of us, the AI factory, using the software platforms that we have built, including TEAL and Jarvis Labs, you have like three layers that form the base of how the customer is going to kind of like use their own sovereign AI. And on top of that, you can put like your own agentic framework of like being able to observe, think and act, and which is something that acts as a harness, which is the execution loop that would that runs your observe, think cycle with a state tracking and tool invocation, and wraps like your raw model into reliable agentic workflows that you as an enterprise could essentially use. Now, with open source coming very, very close to how the frontier models are working, like we are very close to achieving sovereignty, AI sovereignty for our customers, where like all four components kind of like interoperate with each other using the software that we provide to our customers. And that is what we believe is the key for E2E to be able to help the customers leverage the entire E2E stack using open source to kind of like make organizations AI enabled. So both from the perspective of kind of like either running their own in-house small language models or even large language models which are proprietary to them, or help them fine-tune open source models which are now very, very close to capability in terms of where frontier models lie today. So like we are able to kind of like capture value for our customers at each of these layers, as opposed to kind of like frontier models which are not owned but only rented and are subject to various risks, both of the nature of like political as well as simply because like a private organization controls like who can access their model and who they would suddenly decide that, okay, this is not a legitimate use case, let us shut down this customer. So open source based models on sovereign AI factory like us eliminates that risk of someone sitting a couple of thousand miles away and judging you for how you're going to use your AI. So as a company, we are very, very focused on building the operating leverage for us on the principle of like do less and do better. And this allows us to have higher quality partnerships and higher future growth without us relying on chasing vanity metrics. So with that, I would like to hand over the call to Nitin, where he can explain like how we have done this quarter based on some of the philosophies that we have spoken about. Over to you, Nitin.
Thank you, Tarun. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. I would walk you through the financial performance for the first quarter FY 2027. Let me start with the quarterly highlights. Revenue for the quarter stands at 1568 million, which is up 334% year-on-year and 64% quarter-on-quarter. EBITDA stood at 1179 million, with margins expanding up to 75.2%. EBITDA margin expanded 1450 basis points compared to Q4 2026. We clocked profit before tax at 586 million compared to 86 million in Q4. The PAT stood at 439 million. The performance for the quarter is driven by operating leverage and the B200 cluster going live. Now I would like to open the floor for questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. As a reminder, to all the participants, please restrict yourself to two questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question comes from the line of Neel Munot with Eco Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Good morning.
Yeah, hi, Mr. Neel.
Yeah. Am I audible?
Yes, yes, please go.
Yeah. Sir, this current quarter revenue and MRR jump, can you give us a mix between volume and utilization versus pricing? How much is driven by utilization, how much is driven by pricing?
So, like, we are talking about revenue. So, like, of course, there is an expansion both in terms of utilization and addition of capacity, so which have both majorly driven the revenue, as opposed to, like, just pricing alone, where we have seen a very moderate impact in this preview for the quarter that went by.
Understood. And sir, the new B200s that we've deployed mid-May, have they been committed fully in terms of capacity, as in terms of utilization?
Yeah, and, like it's quite a maximal utilization of capacity that we have.
And sir, is this on Indian AI? Have been they committed to Indian AI mission or on our own platform?
Currently, like, we are in a process of, like, working with a customer around these GPUs and kind of, like, in a couple of weeks, we can figure out, like, how this goes forward in the future.
Thank you. Mr. Munot, please rejoin the queue for more questions. Next question comes from the line of Bharat Kulati with Dalal at Voyager Stock Broking. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Tarun sir, for the opportunity. Just regarding utilization levels for our H100, H200 and B200s, so what would have been the exact mix in the exit MRR for this quarter, and how much more runway do we have to grow? I understand we've announced a price hike in the month of July. So what kind of impact is that going to give us in Q2 in terms of MRR growth? Yeah.
See, we are majorly focused on increasing the utilization of the existing fleet, which is pretty much at, like, maximum levels compared to any previous quarter. Now, that being said, like, the major growth will come from capacity addition as opposed to majorly on the price hike side is what we believe.
Got it. And sir, you just spoke about soft cloud. So just trying to understand that these, you know, sovereign workflows that we are hosting, are they yielding us better EBIT margins? Are they sort of asset light in nature, and the private cloud business that we had iterated a couple of quarters back, has that started to kick in? If you can throw some light on that.
See, the operating leverage is obviously kicking in as, like, we have increased the amount of capacity. Now you asked a bunch of questions. So soft cloud, like, essentially is like a subsidiary where the idea is to be able to kind of, like, hold and contract large scale GPU clusters. Then you asked, like, a couple of more things, like, if you could repeat.
Thank you. Mr. Gulati, please rejoin the queue for more questions. Next question comes from the line of Bhavya Gandhi with Bajaj Alternate Investment Management Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi, congratulations, sir, on a very good set of numbers, sir. Commendable. So I just wanted to understand, next, the B200 deliveries, when can we expect? Any timeline if you can provide?
So we expect them to be here in next couple of months. So, like, we'll obviously be keeping everyone informed once they're there.
Okay. And so would you like to guide for exit MRR full year basis this year?
So we don't provide a guidance on MRR. We always kind of, like, advise everyone to look at, like, what we have done in the past rather than kind of, like, predict the future. So again, like, we would like to reiterate that let's look at the past gone by quarter's exit MRR rather than predict something for the future.
Thank you. Mr. Gandhi, please rejoin the queue for more questions. Next question comes from the line of Nishant Joshi with Equisense Advisors Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Sir, good morning. I have a query regarding, can you give a bifurcation how much of the revenue is coming from inference and how much comes from training? And can you give an outlook for next 2 to 3 quarters how this ratio would change?
See, we are pretty small in terms of like size and volume. So major volumes, of course, like continue to be on training. Now, that being said, we have increasingly seen that like while people run their training clusters during their working hours, they also utilize the same clusters for running like inference during the night. So pretty much hard to pin down the fungibility of compute to say that like, okay, when the workload is training and when the workload is inference. We have seen like both the use cases being run in parallel, where you can't like put a specific number to, okay, how many GPUs are on training and how many GPUs are on inference. Pretty much both the workloads, along with agentic, increasingly agentic workloads, continue to be run on the same infrastructure.
So, sir, is it that margins are better on training part and pretty lower on the inference part?
It's hard to measure like what part is there on training and inference. Now, eventually, of course, like at a global level of compute, like inference will have a preponderance over training. But like on a very small subset of GPUs, like we are literally talking about 5,000 or so GPUs, like very, very hard to kind of like say that, okay, what percentage is on training today and what percentage is on inference.
Thank you. Mr. Joshi, please rejoin the queue for more questions. Next question comes on the line of Keshav with Nivishai. Please go ahead.
Congratulations.
Hi, Keshav. How are you?
Yeah. Hi, Parimji. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
Congratulations on the great quarter. So if you could help us understand the recent subsidiaries, the Delaware entity and the GPU infrastructure entity, and I think you already spoke about SoftCloud. So, like, whether this, you know, any of these mentors or financing or maybe HS vehicle, or maybe if you can just throw some light in that.
Sorry, I didn't really understand your question. Like, can you repeat? Your voice was not super clear.
So, yeah. So, actually, we recently set up the entities in Delaware and the GPU infrastructure entity and the SoftCloud. I think you already spoke about that.
Sure.
So, if you can give some color on these subsidiaries.
Sure. So SoftCloud is essentially an infrastructure subsidiary, very, very focused on build out of the infrastructure. And the US entity, the Delaware entity, obviously is focused on selling in the international market and being able to establish presence outside India, where like we can work both towards like market access as well as to alliance management as well as like service customers who are outside India.
Sure. And I think on the presentation you mentioned in the under the SoftCloud section that, you know, large scale GPU deployment and enabling funding arrangement to accelerate this AI infrastructure. If you can provide some maybe strategic insights on this plan.
So very early days, like, so as we do more, like, we'll obviously announce that.
Thank you. Mr. Keshav, please rejoin the queue for more questions. Next question comes on the line of Varun Gandhi with FinAvenue Growth Fund. Please go ahead.
Hi, Varun.
Hey, Tarun. Again, great set. Very positively surprised. Number one would be on the margins. Going forward, should we expect these sort of gross margins to be normal? Because, you know, it's the best margin we've seen in the recent history.
Yeah, so it's a combination of like increased utilization, like very robust demand scenario in the market, and also majorly driven by operating leverage as we grow larger. Now, as we grow in size, we obviously intend to have a judicious mix of both contracted revenue as well as the on-demand and spot revenue, and also explore various AI services in terms of inference and agentic based on open source models. So I do believe that this is quite sustainable over the medium term and potentially the long term.
Got it. Secondly, is there a chance you could share a mix between revenue contribution by customers? So for example, enterprise, AI customers, startups.
We are quite small for that right now. So let us grow, try to focus on growing bigger. Because these kind of become tracking metrics for everyone once we say, oh, this is important, and then people start tracking something, and then there is potentially no relevance for these metrics today. So my advice would be that let us not do this today. I think at certain point of time, at a certain scale, probably it would start making sense. Today, at 5,000 GPUs, and another 1,000 coming in, still the size is too small to start talking about these metrics is what we believe.
Thank you. Mr. Gandhi, please rejoin the queue for more questions. Next question comes from the line of Vedant with Nirmal Bang Securities. Please go ahead.
Am I audible?
Hi. Yes, please go.
Firstly, congratulations, sir, on the great set of numbers. My
Thank
question
you.
Pertains to outlook on AI industry. We are listening some kind of things about AI bubble, and simultaneously China developing some AI models which are cheap and very competitive to American model. So what are your comments on that part? And if something happens, AI commoditization happens, so how do you see
what
your
we believe is sure. So I'm hearing you, sir. So what we believe in is that essentially it is still day zero in the world of AI. If you are plugged into the AI ecosystem, I think every week there are some very significant pieces of news related to AI technology. Some of them tend to get picked up by media and blown out of proportion, and people start to pay attention to that. We believe that some of those things which are equally important are completely ignored. So it is still day zero at AI. We are still in the midst of largest build-out in the history of history itself, where the whole world is building the AI super cycle. And I think we are at the beginning of that AI super cycle, and it's still day zero at AI. I don't think we should worry too much about, okay, this happened, and will the whole AI industry compress because of this one event or this new thing that is happening? So I don't think we have come to that sort of stage anywhere where one particular news item that we are hearing is going to change the whole AI industry. I don't think that's the case today. I think pretty much we are seeing a very broad trend where most organizations in their AI adoption are fairly early, except for AI natives. Everyone else is fairly early in the ecosystem. And I think the runway for AI is very, very long. I think in the past we have spoken about this is a decadal theme. I think we've just begun that decadal theme of AI adoption amongst the organizations. I don't think we should start worrying about this or that news item. Like I said, there is a lot of news on AI which doesn't get captured by media, which is equally important. Some of the things get captured and then get blown out of proportion. So I wouldn't worry too much about any of the news items related to AI, which either are predicting like tomorrow the world of AI is changing, or tomorrow there is a doomsday scenario in AI. I don't think either of them are true.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
I hope I have been able to answer your question.
Yes, sir. So you expressed your views. Thank you so much for that. And my second question is, there was some computing shortage, I think so. That's why your realizations have increased some bit. So how you see it going forward on the realization part, the demand-supply gap between the computing GPUs?
I think that it's like, again, like we have to look at like over a couple of years. So like the compute needs could come in phases. Like, so there would be phases where there is like shortage of demand. There would be phases where there is shortage of supply. Eventually, if you look at like a long enough cycle of 5-6 years for any particular set of assets, they would see both good times and maybe slight bad times. Where hopefully with increasing adoption, all of these curves would smooth out a lot more, where customers would be able to predict demand in advance, and the supply side would react accordingly, and eventually that demand would back supply in a way that like nobody is losing money, whether it is the buyers of AI compute or whether it is the sellers of AI compute. I think like we'll all find our equilibrium in the medium term. So majorly, like, we are not really talking about like the kind of like increased pricing as a result resulting into like the stupendous set of numbers. Majorly, like, our numbers reflect the increased capacity and increased operating leverage more than anything else.
Thank you. Mr. Vedant, please rejoin the queue for more questions. Next question comes from the line of Shubham Tamarakar, CFA with Alturas. Please go ahead.
Hi, am I audible?
Yes, sir.
Hello. Yeah. Hi. Thank you, sir, for giving this opportunity. First of all, great set of numbers. Sir, I have a question with respect to the pricing increase. So,
sorry, your voice is not audible.
Now it is audible, sir?
Yeah, now it is audible.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to understand that how much capacity is still there at old prices, and what is there any pushback we receive when we increase our prices?
Okay, so essentially, like, we are in this for the long term. Now, what we find is that, like, for every generation that we deploy, like, there would be ups and downs in each of those generations. And eventually, each generation of GPUs will find their sweet spot in terms of price-performance ratios. And obviously, like, all contracts need to be honored. Wherever we enter into contracts with customers, whether they are advantageous to us or whether they could be slightly disadvantageous to us. Like, so essentially, like, we are here to play for the long term. So like with regard to pushback on pricing, I think like making sure that like the customers are able to find value in our software and orchestration platform, and are able to experience our solutioning and support, and we are able to access higher quality customers, is more important to us than worry about like pricing alone as a way to do business. So like our goal is to kind of like have like a very harmonious relationship with our customers, and I do believe that like customers do understand that the market is offering a certain set of goods and services at a certain price, and that needs to be respected. And I don't feel that like there is like a very massive what you call pushback from the customers that like, look, this is something that has to be available at this price and continue to be available at this price. Of course, post-contracts, like the price needs to be renegotiated, and like most customers are happy to renegotiate the price based on the current market scenario and current market conditions.
Fine. And so second question with respect to the timelines of new capacity and the CAPEX plan that we are thinking of. So if you can help us to understand this also. And also,
we obviously plan to deploy the B200 as soon as the new lot becomes available to us. And we are expecting that to happen soon over the next couple of months. And apart from that, like, we obviously plan to build more capacity in terms of more black wells, including like non-flagship black wells as well. And also we have plans to expand our capacity into Vera Rubin. And as and when we kind of like have immediate figures for like, okay, like we are going to deploy X number of GPUs of this generation, we'll obviously come and talk about that. So for now, I would like to maintain that like we are both aggressive as well as judicious in terms of our capacity expansion. And being a AI factory, a neo cloud, owning its own platform, like for us, like definitely getting more GPUs is like the way forward for us. And we would continue to do that.
Thank you. Mr. Tamalakar, please rejoin the queue for more questions. Next question comes from the line of Rohan Nagpal with Helios Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi Rohanji.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Congratulations again, set of numbers. So I had a question on renewed CPU pricing that you were that you had intimated customers of. Two questions on that. One, is it driven purely by market conditions changing and demand increasing, or is there an underlying cost pressure that's driving the cost increase over there? And the second thing was, you intimated a price increase going live, then you rolled it back. And you pushed it out a little further. So could you just talk about the dynamics over there?
Sure. So see, primarily on CPU, like it's not like a very major volume from a revenue perspective today for us. That being said, like we would like to continue to add CPU, which is what necessitated increase in pricing for the CPU customers, because at whatever price point we offer our services, like we would like our services to be of the highest quality, and to maintain that quality, like the requirement was that like we should be able to charge more. Now we obviously propose that to our longer term customers, and so there was like an ask from the customers that okay, like whatever we have are already using, like is there a way to preserve the price point for us. So where we offered that, yeah, like if you would like to kind of like contract out some of the capacity for a slightly longer term, say 1 year, 2 years, then we can hold the current price for the duration of the contracting, which is an option that many of our customers chose, where they said that, okay, like we'll pay you like some advance and we'll increase the contract length from normal 1 month to about say a year or 6 months or 9 months or even more than a year. So many of the customers came back and they agreed to that. So that's the main dynamic around CPU pricing, where the customers who wanted to hold the current price, we were able to give them an option that yes, why not contract out that capacity that you are already using for a slightly longer term. And then we can like proceed with the revision of your current contracted capacity, which allows us to service you at a higher quality and which allows us to continue to expand the capacity, especially since the price of hardware from a CPU perspective has increased by a much larger percentage compared to the price of hardware on the GPU side. So because like the cost of memory that has increased has hit the CPU side much higher in percentage terms than the GPUs. So to to accommodate that, like, we had to, in fact, like, increase the price of both the GPUs and CPUs. And it's not just about the higher demand scenario that necessitated the price increase. So it was also that, like, some of these input costs actually increased for us.
Thank you. I think that's it.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Ashish Ajit Gulecha with B Ventures LLP Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, sir. Ashish, congratulations. Are you able to hear me?
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Tarunji, the question was that in the PPT, you mentioned that you have started preliminary planning for next generation architectures like NVIDIA V300 and Vera Rubin. Now, you know that entering the current compressed life cycle of AI hardware, which you always mentioned in earlier calls, how do you protect the ROIC for the older Hooper and early Blackwell processor? Because what happens, you only in your last 2-3 con calls have mentioned that client preferences shift aggressively downstream. So this is my first question, and second question I'll ask when you finish this question. Thank you.
Okay, sure. Let me try and answer the question as best as I can. So we've always maintained that, like, we see at the minimum a 6-year life cycle for all the GPU generations. And we have seen, like, even our older generations continue to run very strong with our customers. So, like, every generation will run through its life cycle where eventually it finds a sweet spot of price and performance ratios, aided increasingly by increase in performance and efficiency of the open source model, and fine tuning that, like, a lot of people share in open source that, okay, how do we get an X100 to perform this much on this open source model in terms of tokens per second or latency, or H100 or an H200 or a B200 or the newer generations of, like, B3 or Vera Rubin. So all of that put together, like, gives the GPU quite a long life cycle. So where we believe that, like, that long life cycle is conducive to kind of, like, monetize those GPUs through like almost like 5 to 6 years. Kind of like we don't foresee that there is a massive price compression because of a newer generation GPU coming in. Because newer generation will have its own sweet spot for price performance ratio for some of the newer models. But like whoever is using the smaller models or older models, they don't necessarily, or people who have built their own proprietary SLM, they don't necessarily intend to kind of like go for the latest generation GPU at a much higher price point, because as a newer model will obviously have like a increasingly higher cost by whatever percentage that number is.
Okay, thank you so much, Arunji. My other question is, like, the accelerated computing now is deeply anchored to NVIDIA ecosystem. So, considering, I wanted to talk regarding the ASIC threat, that how does E2E threshold structure based to integrate non-architecture NVIDIA architecture hardware into the PIR platform? Because if the enterprise demand diversifies, how do you address this issue? I hope I am clear on this.
Not super clear, but like what I heard, like I tried to answer that. So we have worked the longest time on GPUs with NVIDIA, like all the way from 2019 onwards. And obviously, like, they have certain best practices and they have released a lot of open source around like how to kind of like integrate and wrap around your GPUs in your platform. So there is a lot of opinion over there from NVIDIA, and we continue to incorporate like a lot of opinion and advice and their open source software into our platform. So that we continue to do. That being said, like, we are also open to integrating like any accelerated computing platforms into our platform wherever like our software can be compatible with anything. We are super happy to extend our software to encompass any technology from any provider. We are like quite vendor neutral in that respect.
Thank you.
I was able to answer your question.
Thank you. Mr. Kolesha, please rejoin the queue for more questions. Next question comes from the line of Abhishek Shindadkar with Incred Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, Abhishek.
Hi, sir. Thank you for the opportunity and congrats on an amazing quarter. Just two questions. One is on the sustainability and the visibility of the current performance. So basis all the operating metrics that you may be tracking internally, if you can just give a color in terms of the sustainability and the visibility of this performance going into, this 2Q and 3Q. And second, you kind of highlighted it, but just wanted to understand, are customers now trying to lock in capacity for longer, given both the increase in the prices and what we are seeing in the entire hardware ecosystem, especially from a supply chain perspective? And does that kind of improve the annuity, visibility for us, given historically we had, short cycle capacity as well?
Sure. So definitely, there are customers who do prefer longer term contracts because they would not like their prices to increase willy-nilly because they were on demand or monthly or very short-term contracts. And there again, we have seen increased demand from the customer side where they would like to see longer-term contracts of 2 to 3 years coming their way. And so as we judiciously move some percentage of our capacity, we haven't decided what percentage that should be. So that definitely builds in predictability for the demand that we have for our capacity and builds some predictability into the revenue. So we'll obviously continue to explore those options as well as execute those options. And we have done some of that and we have announced some of that in the past as well. And we would continue to increasingly do so as well. And we also like some of our capacity to have the flexibility of where we are able to charge higher when the demand goes up. So that also will continue to do. Now, you had one more question. Can you repeat the second part of your question?
Yes. The first question was about the visibility and the sustainability of the current quarterly performance.
Right. So this is in our belief, quite sustainable because I think each of the generations which are already there are finding their sweet spot in terms of price performance. And we believe that over the medium term, they are quite sustainable. And at those price points, quite a few customers are very willing to sign up longer term contracts. So we find there is a lot of predictability over there. Both predictability as well as sustainability of the revenue.
Thank you. Mr. Shindadkar, please rejoin the queue for more questions. Next question comes from the line of Bharat Kulati with Dalal & Broacha Stock Broking. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the follow-up, sir. So just two parts to my question for Tarun, sir. Firstly, the breakup last quarter for domestic and foreign business was 60-40, and India emission was about 40% last quarter. So what has that trended to this quarter? And in terms of your ambition for, let's say, 2 years out, how many GPUs should we be sitting at? And just I have a follow-up for Nitin sir after this. Yeah.
Sure. So with regard to capacity building, we've already said that we intend to be both judicious as well as aggressive. Now, from a revenue composition in the previous quarter, I think India revenue was about 20-21%. And international was closer to 37% or so. And rest is all domestic revenue. So that's those are the numbers.
Got that. And just on for Nitin sir, with regards, just a couple of bookkeeping questions with regard to the interest cost spike we've seen during this quarter. Is that due to some debt we've taken on for the CapEx? And regarding the DC cost that hits our P&L, has it completely got baked into this quarter's numbers? Should we see that flatlining going forward?
So in terms of the interest portion, you are right. The interest is because of the loan that we have taken across to fund the first lot of B200. And second, in terms of the cost for DC cost, it would be fluctuating to the extent as the usage would be increasing. So the electricity portion would keep on increasing.
And what percentage would that be of our entire DC cost? I'm understanding our DC cost for the quarter was close to 23%.
These are not like super granular numbers. Like, so broadly, like, a lot of the cost for existing capacity is already baked in for this quarter. And like, in the coming quarters, like, some of that cost would increase, but like, I don't think that would be a very massive percentage.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mr. Gulati, please rejoin the queue for more questions. Next question comes from the line of Bhavya Gandhi with Bajaj Alternate Investment Management Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the follow-up. So two questions. One is regarding the absolute loan and CapEx for the loan amount outstanding as of for the quarter and the total CapEx plan for the year. And the second question is regarding, so we've mentioned in the PPT, we are looking for funding requirements for sovereign cloud, SOV cloud. So if you can throw some light on that as well.
Sorry, I didn't understand the question. Like, so you were talking about like SOV cloud, like, what is the exact question about?
Yeah. So what are the funding requirements that we are looking for SOV cloud? Any plans, if you can share on the SOV cloud? I believe in the PPT you mentioned about the-
We always say that, like, let us build and execute the plans and then kind of like put them out there. So, like, as we build and execute the plans, like, we would obviously make everyone aware of those plans. And what was the other question?
Absolute loan amount, if you can mention short-term, long-term debt, for the year and the CapEx plans
Sure.
for the year.
So I'll let Nitin answer the question related to the loan.
Sure.
So the loan, which stands as of now, is broadly 450 crore, which, with the other lot coming in picture, it would be increasing across in the near term.
Yeah, possible to quantify that, sir? Total loan amount, peak debt for the year.
No, I don't be quantifying that amount.
Thank you. Mr. Gandhi, please rejoin the queue for more questions. Next question comes from the line of Ashish Ajit Kulecha with B Ventures LLP Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, sir.
Hi.
Am I audible? Yeah.
Yes, please.
So my question was, the preferential issue total around 2 years was 1.9 crores. So wanted to understand, are you planning further equity raise also? Because point is, whatever the CapEx which you have basically shown earlier, wanted to understand where is that 881.1 crore CapEx gone? If you could show, share that utilization, it would be really great. This is my first question, sir.
Sure. So I'll
Hello.
Let Nitin answer the question about, like, utilization of preferential funds which were allocated towards, like, the CapEx. That is one. And second, like, whatever GPUs we have already announced, their funding is fully arranged and backstopped by debt or internal accruals or previous equity raises. So that is already arranged for. And with regard to, like, any future plans for equity raises, like, obviously we would let everyone know if and when that happens.
Okay. So then, Nitin answers, another thing was, in the Q4 call, the 3,900 figure was described as CPU and GPU storage, all capacities put together. But the current PPT, which you have shared yesterday, which is very good, presents that 3,900 and 5,100 on a chart titled GPU trajectory. So this 5100 is what your accelerators or blended capacity unit? I hope my question is clear.
Yeah, so nearly 5100 is the current capacity which is live on our platform today. That's the number of GPUs which are live today. So that does not include the another 1024 B200 we are expecting soon.
Thank you. Mr. Golecha, please rejoin the queue for more questions. Next question comes from the line of Chirag Satya with Satya Investments. Please go ahead.
Hi.
Hi, Mr. Chirag.
Sir, I just wanted to understand the financial dynamics of the strategic partnership with L&T.
Okay. So, what is the exact question over there?
I mean, how does that, I mean, in terms of revenue, how does it work out for you? How do they pay you or something?
Sure, sure. So, like L&T like is an arm's length partner where like we are working with them to kind of like utilize their data center capacity. So like we are a buyer over there. They tend to utilize our cloud infrastructure where they are the buyers. And then jointly with regard to our platform, we do go to customers. So that is there. So that's how the arrangement is basically. And tomorrow, like if L&T is building compute capacity, then we are also looking to kind of like partner with them and like offtake some of that capacity. So like all relationships at arm's length are present and will continue to kind of like operationalize over a period of time.
Okay, and second question is, how do you see the growth trajectory in the next 2 to 3 years?
Okay. So, like we have mentioned that, like basically, like AI is entering into like a huge super cycle. So we fully intend to be a part of that, like build out in terms of like. Both the infrastructure capacity, like again aggressively and judiciously, and in terms of like build out of our platform, where our platform is able to increasingly help our customers do more in terms of like whether it is like training their in-house models or fine-tuning open source models or running inference at a scale or running elliptic harnesses that are able to take care of their enterprise AI-driven processes. So we want to be able to help our customers qualitatively in all these aspects.
Thank you. Mr. Satya, please rejoin the queue for more questions. Next question comes from the line of Sukrit D. Patil with iSight FinTrade Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I have two questions. The first question to Mr. Dua is, this quarter growth is very good, but the cloud industry is entering a tougher phase. Hyperscalers are scaling aggressively. Customers are pressing harder on pricing and technological cycles are also getting short. How do you see the company positioning itself?
We have been in this business for 16 plus years, so we have seen everything. So, like, cycles will continue. There would be good times, there would be bad times. But, like, we are very confident that, like, for every cycle, like, we will kind of, like, continue to grow. So, that's what we believe in.
My second question to Mr. Jain is, just want to understand, how are you approaching the balance between funding expansion, keeping liquidity strong, and ensuring shareholder returns? Looking ahead to the next quarter, any roadmap that can you can give a layout on? Thank you.
So I think from a funding perspective, we keep a balance between the funding and the building up capacity aggressively and judicially. So there we keep a quite balance that we should not be too aggressive or we should not miss the bus, which is the India AI bus. Which is the AI bus.
Thank you.
Hello.
Yes, speakers. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraints, we have reached the end of question and answer session. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Tarun Dua for closing comments.
Thank you everyone for joining us this early in the morning. And I hope we have been able to answer most of your questions. And we do welcome this interaction. And any further questions, please do reach out to us at investors@e2enetworks.com. And we will reach out back to you and like answer all your queries. And we hope to keep you updated about our ongoing expansion plan and kind of like keep you informed about like what we are building on the platform, how we are seeing things. And we hope to keep communicating and a very good morning once again to everyone and please have a good day. And we would like to thank all our investors. We would like to thank all our partners. We would like to thank all of our team members. It is with all your support and love that like we have reached where we have reached. And we hope to continue to enjoy your support in our ongoing journey. And thank you everyone once again.
Thank you. On behalf of E2E Networks Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your line.